Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome along to another Pro Wrestling Index podcast here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I am your host, Andy Wales, and yes, we've been away. We've had a bit of a break, but goodness gracious, great balls of fire. We're back, are we not? More chatter.
Absolutely, indeed we are, Andy. Great to be back. Seems like ages since was last on. Various things have been coming up for all of us on the team, but back we are, and a lot to talk about as always.
Yes, and I even managed to squeeze in a little pun there.
Very good, yeah. Most awfully titled WWE show in history. What were they thinking?
Great balls of fire. In the words of John W. Henry, what are they smoking over there?
Well, I mean, it's so bad that even their own talent, like, there's a few of them, actually, that were kind of poking fun at the...
Yeah, we retweeted a few on the PW Index Twitter account, at PW underscore index, one from Becky Lynch, which I particularly enjoyed. Great balls of fire. What the? I enjoyed that. But anyway, enough of great balls of fire. I'll never get over that one. I can't wait till we preview that. It's just going to be absolutely insane.
We can just spend the whole show making puns about it, couldn't we?
I can dream up 1,000 terrible jokes. Trust me, I can sit all week dreaming up terrible jokes for this. But we have had. A pay-per-view recently. We did miss that one, and obviously we're not going to go break it down match by match by match, but it was Payback. I must admit, my expectations were not too high going into it. I was not exactly enamored by it. The build was underwhelming, shall we say, but it's got mixed reactions. Now, I've heard some people say it was absolutely awful. I've even heard a few people, you know, respected people, be quite positive about it. What about yourself, Mo? How did you feel in general about the Payback event?
It was certainly not a great show, but I didn't think it was a poor show. Clearly, there were a couple of strong negatives about it. Everything involving Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton was just really poor, especially their House of Horror stuff, which is clearly pre-taped. And now that was amongst the worst programming put out by the WWE in years and years. Yeah. It was that bad.
The thing is, as people at the event could, you know, easily tell, is that When they were doing the start of that match, it was still light outside. Yet here we are, supposedly live, and it's absolutely pitch black. You know, it was just it went past, you know, like the stupidity on the side, you know, where you could laugh about it as ridiculous. It just, for me, that just, it just pushed things way, way too far.
Oh, it did. Yeah. It was just really poorly done all round. And, no, it also looked like it was in the middle of nowhere potentially. And yet the show itself was taking place in, you know, a well built up area in San Jose in California. So it was just, for me, it just summed up everything that's wrong with the Wyatt character, quite frankly. It's a character that just doesn't work. It's a character that's got no traction in the WWE. It just is really, really struggling. And, you know, bar fans putting the torches on their phones whenever he makes his entrance, that's the only real thing that he's got going for him at this moment in time. Everything else is just a complete fail. His interviews don't get over. Most of his matches leave a lot to be desired. And as a character, he clearly doesn't resonate with the audience like a large section of the roster that is pushed at that level is getting over. So I think they've really, really got to start scratching their heads and thinking, okay, how much more do we persist with this character? Because if he's really not getting over and fans are, you know, apathetic towards him, indifferent towards him, does he really warrant this push? Do we need to change the gimmick and do something else with him? And I think they do. They've persisted with this gimmick for, what, 3 years now. And, you know, it just has no momentum whatsoever. And, you know, he's starting to get another big push on Raw. But the fans just don't seem to care. And the guy behind the gimmick is a great talent. You know, there's no question about that. But you know, the gimmick itself for me just doesn't work. And, you know, it really was summed up on this show.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for the guy in that, you know, he's putting everything into it. And the way that they've booked him and handled him over the past couple of years has been really, really poor. He's been made to look very weak. Just by, you know, telling everyone he's, you know, the face of fear and all the rest of it, is barring a few wardrobe changes here and there, that the character is the same character. It hasn't progressed. It hasn't evolved. It hasn't developed at all, really, in the past 2 to 3 years. And he got so over with the audience that it was the time to really, for me, was to flip it. You know, as they did with The Undertaker over the years, you know, he went heel to babyface in quite subtle ways and then would turn back. And when he became the heel, he had that sort of demonic, nasty edge to him. And that's something that they've never really done with Bray Wyatt. So for me, Bray Wyatt doesn't really get over as an actual heel, even though we're supposed to see him and believe him as a heel. He doesn't really get over to me that this guy is actually a heel. He's just a nothing. You know, he's just this guy that floats around and does these pointless promos and now dreams up with this match. I mean, what the hell's the point of fighting in the house and then you've got to drive to go back to a ring to finish off a match? I mean, who the hell dreamed up with that? It's utter stupidity. And this is the guy who's suffering for the way that they're just dragging their heels, I think, ultimately. And it's, I mean, by all accounts, the reaction from the live crowd when they were showing the stuff up on the screen was boring. They were just chanting, boring, boring, boring. And you know, that is what it is now.
Well, it is, that's right. And it's not just Bray as well. I mean, the other half of that match, Randy Orton, is another individual in the upper echelon of the overall roster that really has lost momentum and certainly far less over than he was 5, certainly 10 years ago. Really feels like a tired, dated act. And in many ways he is. And again, you know, it's a shame because Randy Orton is a very, very talented worker. But, you know, he's not the most charismatic of people. He's not the most entertaining when it comes to promos. And, you know, he too has lost something, certainly when it comes to crowd reactions. And, you know, these two together, there's just not been the chemistry there. And, you know, their feud should have really ended at WrestleMania, shouldn't have carried on beyond that. And clearly outstayed its welcome. And, you know, the clear evidence was there at Payback. And, you know, the fans rightly couldn't care less about it because there was just nothing given to care about. And the fact that the House of Horrors match itself was something that creative couldn't really make their mind up about tells you that they were really struggling to get motivated for what was a few that just, you know, really didn't amount to anything.
Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, the crowd had pretty much died off, you know, if they hadn't already died off by the start of that match, that was it. That was the end of the event of effectively any kind of atmosphere, which killed, you know, what would come after it. Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe, I thought it wasn't a great match between them. I mean, we'll get to it, but I think they had a far better match on Raw. But I think their match really suffered from the fact that by that point, the crowd were just done. They weren't interested anymore. And even Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns towards the end, you know, I thought they put on a good show, but the atmosphere within the stadium, within that stadium from the beginning, as opposed to the end of the event, it's got to be pretty telling to people at WWE. You'd hope it would be, at least.
Well, that brings me neatly on to one of my other gripes about the show, is that obviously Bayley lost in front of a hometown crowd in San Jose, and Alexa Bliss became the new Raw Women's Champion. And, you know, great for Alexa, but it was yet again WWE making the cardinal error of jobbing out somebody in front of their hometown audience. And this happens over and over again. I mean, it's a Vince McMahon policy, in fact, that when you have talents working in front of their hometown, that they can't get over. They're not allowed to go over, rather. They have to be put over a heel if they're a face, because it's a great way to get heels over. And, you know, that's just a completely arse backward mentality, because, you know, if they really put over Bayley in front of a hometown crowd over and get a big win in a good match, you know, she can go back to San Jose many more times and, you know, be, you know, the main draw in that market. And, you know, they can do the same with others on their roster as well. Whenever they go, you know, in front of their hometown crowds or home state crowds, and you know, it's a Vince policy that can't be allowed to happen. There are rare exceptions. I mean, Naomi won at WrestleMania in front of her hometown crowd, but by and large, 9 times out of 10, especially if there are faces, they are jobbed out in front of the hometown audience. And that certainly, as you were pointing out, seemed to deflate the crowd as well.
Yeah, it's a strange one, that, isn't it? I mean, it deflates the crowd, and you think, you know, she came in such a huge star, great reaction. If she'd have won that match, she'd have come out of it, you know, with another great reaction. And all the viewers at home, you know, and other people are going to attend events, see that, and see that, you know, their perception there is, wow, she's a massive star. You know, if they really wanted to flip the title over and go that way, you know, surely they could do that the next night on Raw. You know, there's always a way to work that round. And if anything, more people then get to see it as well, don't they?
Well, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just very, very strange mentality. I just don't understand it. I mean, UFC, you know, is a great example. You know, they build up stars in their hometown or home country or home state markets, and use them to draw, you know, very effectively. And, you know, they've done that on countless occasions. They've gone into places like, you know, Toronto and, you know, drawn 50 odd thousand with George St. Pierre. And even though George St. Pierre is not from Toronto, he's a big Canadian star. And, you know, they've done similar things with like some Michael Bisping over here in the UK, and you know, they've had over in the US people who are kind of stars in Texas born and bred, going to Houston and Dallas and you know, performing big marquee matches in those markets. And no, it just makes complete sense to do that, to try and get people over in their hometown markets. And you know, the last
that feel good moment, you know, for, you imagine for all them kids that are there as well supporting Bailey, that's that feel good moment that the next time Bailey's in town, they all desperately want to go and see her.
Well, that's right, absolutely. And you know, if you look at CM Punk, I mean, he got over fantastically well in Chicago, which is his hometown, and he was actually afforded a couple of memorable moments, victories there in front of that audience. And you know, every time he returned, the reaction he would get would be amazing. And you know, even to this day, you know, several years on from his departure from the WWE, they still chant his name. And you know, when they run Backlash in a week and a bit's time, you can guarantee that at some point during that show, you know, CM Punk will be reverberating around the Allstate Arena. So it just shows the kind of power of, you know, allowing people to get over. You know, what a novel concept that is, allowing people to get over. But, you know, it's just one of these strange Vince McMahonisms. I just don't understand it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's times when it does make sense, and there's times when it can be used effectively. But yeah, to do it straight out as a policy to the point where everybody just expects it now is slightly bizarre. Before we, you know, leave Payback behind, and I did want to get your thoughts on one thing. Now, I quite enjoyed that, you know, the Hardys against Cesaro and Sheamus. You know, that they, I thought they had a decent match, and we again saw the handshake thing at the end that they'd been building along and building along. But I really enjoyed the way that it was Cesaro that flipped after it. Then they hit the beat down and they've turned them to. And I just think the timing was right, and it's given them so much momentum that I enjoyed that. That was one of my favorite moments of the event.
Yeah, it was good because it was slightly unexpected as well. And now I suppose there were those very, very subtle hints in the lead up to Payback that, you know, something like that could happen. But you'd have to be paying very close attention. But no, that was really well done and, you know, worked really well. And, you know, I think it was needed in a way because, you know, Cesaro and Sheamus, whilst they're on that brand, alongside Hardys, would never get that gold until they decide to eventually split up the Hardys and turn them into single stars, which probably won't happen until you know, the legal case with TNA's owners in Anthem is sorted out in terms of the Broken Matt Hardy character. So I think for the time being it was the right thing to do, but as you say, it was very well done. And gives a bit more mileage to that program as well, now that we've got a distinct face-heel divide. So I can see it culminating in Cesaro and Sheamus eventually winning those titles, which will be thoroughly well-deserved because I think they've been, you know, surprisingly, you know, very good as a pairing. So I'm sure that time will come, and that time will come possibly in July at Great Balls of Fire.
You say Great Balls of Fire like it was nothing. Like it was a name
with
of
a straight face.
Like it was an established name of an event. Now, at the beginning of the event, Chris Jericho beat Kevin Owens for the US title. So we had then on Raw, it was, you know, the saying goodbye to Chris Jericho. That was his final night on Raw, and he was going to be going over to SmackDown. I was half expecting that, you know, Kevin Owens would be appearing on Raw again. Is, you know, was that what the deal? But obviously not. But clearly, I mean, that they flipped the title again on SmackDown. So, you know, this title flip-flop in 2017 seems to be the year of it. Where do you stand on that? I mean, do you think it was useful for the purpose of just a way of seeing Jericho out and being able to, you know, I suppose, get the equivalent of taking a footballer off in the 89th minute to get a standing ovation before they're done, because obviously he's going to be away now with Fozzy for a period of time.
Yes, I mean, it was a surprise. I didn't expect Jericho to win the title. And I think most fans that pay attention didn't expect that to happen either. Most people knew that Jericho would be disappearing for a while to do his Fozzy thing. So the fact that he beat Kevin Owens for the United States Championship was a pleasant surprise. And obviously they've continued their rivalry over on the SmackDown side. But inevitably that will end. We know that Jericho is disappearing imminently, and you know, it might end as soon as Backlash. That was quite nicely done, and I think you're right. It was perhaps done to give a nice little send off. You know, it might be only 2 months, might be 6 months, but you know, he deserves it as well. He's been a real star for the last 12 months or so. I mean, I remember around April last year when I was talking about how WWE should perhaps ditch Jericho and make that space available for somebody from the NXT side. But Jericho, as he's often done in the past, you know, reinvented himself yet again and developed a really fine comedy character played off perfectly with Kevin Owens in a very memorable double act, and it was rich reward for a really, really strong 12 or so months.
Yeah, I mean, Bray Wyatt could take note of just how people like, you know, Chris Jericho have evolved and changed their character on a constant basis rather than, you know, just doing that same thing over and over like we, you know, we spoke about earlier. So you know, that the evidence is there. You know, there's someone on hand to learn from. But just on Raw then, I mean, how do you feel that Raw has gone since they shook the roster up? You know, we had them move arounds with Kurt Angle now as the GM. How do you feel that the Raw is progressing over the past few weeks since all the roster changes?
It's been a mixed bag in my view, and I don't think that the show's quality has improved. If anything, it's slightly worsened. Braun Strowman, like for many of us, is a guilty pleasure. And yes, he's not the world's greatest worker, but he's a breath of fresh air in a way, because he's a throwback type performer, very kind of 80s style in certain respects. But with a modern twist, and you know, in an environment where you've got a lot of smaller guys who are you know, very good in the ring, but don't have that kind of star presence, larger than life kind of aura about them in the way that Braun Strowman does. You know, I think he's certainly got a role to play. So his kind of push and his evolution has been really good to see. There's been other elements of it, though, that haven't really inspired. Dean Ambrose has moved across, but it's still the same old Dean Ambrose. Now, we've talked at length in the past about how he is another one who's in desperate need of you know, refreshing that gimmick, maybe coming up with something completely new and different. But it's more of the same from him. And, you know, The Miz has gone over, but since, you know, the parting of ways, where he had that great rivalry with John Cena leading into WrestleMania. I think he's slightly lost his way, even though obviously he's being pushed and he's the number one contender for the Intercontinental Championship. But yes, the overall feeling is that, you know, they've not come off of that shake-up quite as well as SmackDown did. And I think the evidence is there to be seen on the weekly TV. I think that the shows have not been poor shows, but they've certainly not been great shows. And, they are really feeling quite samey and a bit formulaic. And as I've said before, I think we're just stuck with this kind of pattern now.
Yeah, I really did feel like that watching the Raw this past week on, you know, from London. I felt like it was a Raw that I've watched probably, I don't know, about 48 times over the past year. But the week before I thought was good, and that's it. It's like you get these rare weeks where Raw is really good, but most of the time it just slips back into this sort of mediocrity. And one thing that's kind of concerning me, should we say, at the moment is what's happening with Finn Balor since his return. Because, you know, I think you've mentioned it before, you know, when he came in from when he came up from NXT, it was like, you know, a rocket was attached to his back. They were going all the way with him. They put the Universal title on him. Obviously, he had to relinquish it the following night through injury. He felt like a huge star. He's come back, and I don't know. I feel like he's almost like he's a little bit lost in the shuffle. Am I seeing things wrong here?
No, you're spot on. Absolutely, 100%. And it's sort of what I was alluding to in the pod that we did just after WrestleMania, when Brock obviously won the Universal Championship, when we're talking about potential opponents for Brock. And one of the names I suggested as an unlikely opponent for Brock would be Finn Balor, because the size difference is just ridiculous. You know, we've got a guy in Brock who clearly has a problem with putting over guys who are a lot smaller than him, and you know, typically does feud with the bigger guys. And that's why I speculated you know, back then, you know, some 5-6 weeks back, that I felt that his next program would be with either Braun Strowman or Roman Reigns. And the word is that had Braun Strowman not suffered his elbow injury in the last week or two, that it would be he that would be competing for the Universal Championship at that pay-per-view that makes you snigger every time we mention it, you know, in July. But obviously the elbow injury might potentially scupper those plans, and it might in fact be Bray facing Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire. But, you know, I speculated it back then that one of the victims of that decision to make Brock Lesnar the Universal Champion could be Finn Balor. And obviously he had that rivalry there when he was put out of commission just after SummerSlam with Seth Rollins, but obviously Seth Rollins has turned face, so they can't really build any storyline around that. And they don't seem too keen to really do anything with him where the Intercontinental Championship is concerned just at this moment in time. So, yes, he's stuck in a little bit of a rut there. I'm sure it's a temporary thing, though. I'm sure that whether it's a few weeks down the line or certainly 3-4 months down the line, we will be seeing him in a more meaningful program. And I've got no doubt that they've still got big plans for him.
Yeah, you would certainly hope so. I mean, he still has that, you know, that effect with the crowd. And I do like the way that they're not jumping straight to him coming out in the Demon gear. Really do. Save that for the pay-per-view matches. Keep it special. And just one last thing on Great Balls of Fire. If Jerry Lee Lewis is not the theme music to that pay-per-view, I will be sorely disappointed. just before we do move off, Rob, because, you know, you mentioned there Seth Rollins. Now, Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe, they've been having this rivalry. And obviously, Seth Rollins, not too natural as a babyface, kind of been growing into it, and I feel like their feud has started to get better in the past couple of weeks. It feels like it's that you're almost like they're finding a groove with each other. And last thing on Raw is, I've got to say, I really enjoyed the match those two had in London. I thought it was really good. I really, really enjoyed that match. And I think there's more to come from them, and I think they can have an even better match than that.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, these are two guys that at different points I've labelled the best wrestlers in the world. So, you know, these are guys who are both capable of exceptional work. And you know, it's unfortunate that since Seth Rollins returned from his original knee injury, he was never looking quite as sharp and as on point as he did prior to the knee injury. Samoa Joe, I thought, was very, very good for a lot of 2016 whilst he was in NXT. Since he stepped up to the main roster, you know, he's certainly been given a very strong push. But with Triple H no longer around, he's been missing a slight little something. So he's got to find his own, you know, real role and position and, breakout as well. I think that he works well as a heel. There's just, it feels like something's missing from him. But one of the things that certainly doesn't miss, where he's concerned is, what he can do in the ring. And I think that, you know, if he and Seth get a chance to work together, possibly even at around Great Balls of Fire, they could produce something really exceptional. They're both more than capable of it. And I think that that could be just a thing to, you know, get things going for both of them. I think that, you know, they're in a pretty decent place, but, you know, they're not quite at the kind of peak levels that they should be at, given how talented they both are. And again, it's yet another consequence of having the main title within the Raw brand effectively on a part-timer that shows up four times a year.
Yeah, I do think, you know, that the whole thing with Lesnar over the past few years of him not being on TV week to week has kept him kind of special, but at this point, coming off WrestleMania, it just feels like it's kind of the wrong thing. And the title not being visible at such a key stage, it does feel like, you know, at the wrong moment. But I'm sure we'll come back to that in time. So switching things across over to SmackDown, you've mentioned already, you know, we feel that, you know, we both feel that they got the better of the changes in the with the rosters. Now, what we have seen in recent weeks is AJ Styles has now moved over and become babyface, and like we said, you know, that the flip-flop the US title, but it is now back around the waist, on the shoulder of the new face of America, Kevin Owens. I do love the guy. He's you know, that again, another guy who can just slightly tweak his character as he goes along, yet fundamentally still be, you know, that same sort of brazen, nasty heel. So how do you feel things are going with SmackDown and the way that, in my eyes, to my perception almost, that with AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, that the US title feels more prominent than the WWE Championship at the moment?
Well, it's hard to disagree. I mean, clearly, the more talented individuals are involved in the United States Championship. Same can't really be said for the WWE Championship, World Championship, whatever it's called this week. And a lot of that's got to do with the fact that they've decided that Jinder Mahal should be the person who should be the number one contender for the WWE Championship. And, you know, that's been a very contentious issue. And a lot of the talk has been that I think it's TNA had struck a deal in India, quite a good TV deal. And WWE worried about that, felt that they needed to counter that with a strong move of their own. And they see India as a potentially very, very lucrative market. In fact, some of their greatest number of followers on social media are actually from India. So they felt that as that market matures and you know, they can monetize it more effectively in the years to come, that's something that they didn't want to lose to a competitor. So the word is that they wanted to push Jinder Mahal, or at least an Indian character in that market, and give him a prominent position in the company and possibly even put a title on him. So that explains this sudden push of a guy that up until a few weeks ago, you know, was barely getting on, you know, shows like Main Event, and was a complete non-entity in that company. Yeah, you're quite right. That really has no real momentum to it. Even though they're giving Jinder a big push, and he's become a bit of a cult favorite in certain circles, but he's clearly quite limited and doesn't really warrant the position he's got. In contrast, Kevin Owens is supreme talent, whichever way you want to look at it. And, you know, he will, you know, I'm sure become the US champion again. And if he doesn't, you know, it could be that he will be the next contender for the world championship. If they decide to swerve us again, and maybe Jericho eventually drops that title to someone else. But yeah, you're quite right. At this moment in time, the US Championship is surprisingly where it's at.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, look, I can understand them wanting to make Jinder Mahal more prominent if, you know, they're aiming for that market. If that's the thing behind it, then that's fine. But for me, you know, to suddenly drop him in there, you know, off the back of, you know, a six-pack challenge match for a number one contenders with a number one contender slot with, you know, you looked at some of the guys in it and you thought, what, how the hell did any of these guys get to even the chance to be a number one contender? When you look at how they've been placed on the card previously, it just didn't ring true to people watching it. It's that, you know, ridiculousness of things from time to time. If, you know, if you want to make him prominent, for me, just build him up. Build him up over 2-3 months of running through people, you know, gaining real momentum. And then if he gets, you know, does get that number one contender slot, it isn't seen as a joke and laughable. Is he looks, you know, like a genuine contender, and then they've got something to build behind. But
well, this sort of thing happens.
Talking logic.
Oh, he can't do that. But I mean, this sort of thing happens over and over, that they decide for no obvious reason, except to themselves, that they should start to really push somebody to the moon out of the blue, or do the opposite and bury someone 6 foot under again out of the blue. And when they do these types of things, it really has the desired effect where they're concerned. And I really struggle to think of any guy or girl on their rosters who've just been pushed out of the blue and they've gotten over in the way that they hoped. The only person I can really think of is Kevin Owens, when he was brought up to the main roster and put over John Cena on his first night in. But he did have the benefit of coming in as the NXT champion, so at least the fans had a bit of familiarity, and at least on that brand, he was being pushed and presented in a strong way. Whereas somebody like Jinder Mahal has been a prelim guy for years.
People already knew Kevin Owens. You know, he was already a world-class worker and talker. Yeah. He already had an established character. People knew who he was and were ready to get behind him. It wasn't quite so much of a surprise. It was more of, you know, finally this guy's here, rather than what the hell's he doing there?
Absolutely, that's right. And, you know, again, it just backs up the point you were making, that giving somebody a gradual push and you know, take him through those different steps to establish them as a star is the way to do it. And So I think that, you know, with this gender experiment, I think it will be a few weeks, maybe a couple of months before they decide, actually, no, he's not ready to be in a program for the world title, our number one strap, the strap that has the lineage going back to 1963. So come on, guys, wake up. You know, I think they will. And, you know, Jinder, he won't be relegated back to the position he was. I still think they want a character that, you know, can be seen as a strong individual to get over in the Indian market. But certainly in terms of being a permanent fixture in the main event scene on SmackDown, I just don't see it.
No, I mean, we're talking about them, that, you know, the WWE tapping into these other markets. I mean, that leads us nicely into the move into the UK market. Now, we've already had the UK tournament. Obviously, you know, Raw and SmackDown have been from the UK this week. The UK tour in Europe quite often, you know, that it's very lucrative for them. But now they're looking at this, you know, this regular UK TV program. And the word is that it's Jim Ross and Nigel McGuinness that are going to be doing the commentary. And, you know, to help really sort of help get that over, get a bit more exposure in recent weeks, we've been seeing some of the guys from that UK tournament on NXT. Tyler Bates being on there defending the title, looking slightly different, and I do think going forward his character is going to need a little bit of work. But with this NXT takeover event in Chicago coming up next week, we're going to see Pete Dunne challenge Tyler Bate for the UK championship more. Do you feel that this is the right way to go for WWE? Do you feel that there is enough of a market there for them for this, you know, weekly TV event in the UK? And do you feel like that they're pushing the whole UK title thing enough?
Well, their two-night tournament, which was broadcast live on the WWE Network back in January, was a resounding success. And after that, I thought that they'd follow up very quickly with more tapings. And yet it was only weekend just gone that they eventually got round to following up on those shows that took place in Blackpool, and their second set of tapings. There were two nights of them, which were emanating out of Norwich. And that's a story in itself, because they used the venue that has been used by the family of Paige, the Knight family, for their TV tapings, for their promotion, World Association of Wrestling. And WWE trolled that family by saying, okay, we're going to turn up in your venue. We're going to sell it out two nights. We're going to film our show right out of your venue. 1 week before, you bring in the likes of Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio, now known as Alberto El Patron, and several other former WWE superstars. And that taping schedule for this weekend in Norwich as well. But no, the tapings were a success, and you're quite right. It's Jim Ross and Nigel McGuinness that will be on commentary. And I think the plan is that this will become a weekly show. And again, it goes back to competitive paranoia, because WWE is aware that ITV has plans to turn their World of Sports show, which was trialed as a one-off on New Year's Eve, into a weekly series. And there were actually TV tapings planned for the World of Sports show for later this month, but they've been postponed for a few weeks. So I think that show will likely debut August, September time. And they were actually planning to use Jim Ross for that show until WWE, that were happy to get rid of Jim Ross several years ago, decided, oh no, we can't have Jim Ross going to commentate for a show on network nationwide television in the UK, which happens to be the WWE's second strongest and biggest market. So they brought him back very quickly, and he'll be commentating on the WWE UK weekly show. And I think that will be starting, I think it's late June, possibly early July, and it should be a weekly series from there on in. But, you know, there's an abundance of talent in the UK. And as you mentioned, WWE's just been running various UK dates for its Raw and SmackDown brands too over the last week and a bit. And as part of that tour, they've invited a good couple of dozen talents, mostly from around the UK, you know, just for tryouts. And the word is that they'll be taking several of those individuals over to NXT and the developmental setup that they've got in Orlando. And again, it just goes to show the depth of talent over in the UK that you know, they're looking at the UK as arguably their strongest source of talent right now.
Yeah, it is good for UK fans and for UK wrestlers, you know, that there is an avenue there. You know, years ago it was there was so few and far between that, you know, to see a British wrestler on part of an American promotion was so unique that it was huge. It really did feel huge. Yet here we are, more and more, you know, month on month it seems that we're seeing, and it's becoming a regular thing. And it's nice as well. I feel that you know, there's people within the WWE openly sort of recognizing that the different technical styles and just allowing that to be showcased rather than stopping them using that style. You know, with people like Jack Gallagher, you know, almost encouraging them to have you know, to really showcase what is unique and different about them compared to some of the stuff that you know, American or North American fans are so accustomed to seeing over the years. So it's it's certainly good for British fans and for up and coming British wrestlers. So I mean, we mentioned they're like NXT. So you know, that you said Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, they're going to be fighting for the UK title on this takeover event, which is coming up next weekend. And it's slightly out of the blue because normally it's only, you know, the big four when we see the takeover events. Do you think that this is going to become a more regular thing? NXT takeover specials, maybe every couple of months?
I think so, actually. I mean, if they didn't do this, they'd only have the four shows. And I guess the feeling was that potentially waiting 4 months to culminate feuds between the NXT that takes place before WrestleMania and then the next NXT takeover, which would take place 4 months or so, 4.5 months later, you know, just before SummerSlam, just too big a gap. So it makes sense for me that they're slotting one in at this point in time. So that's on the 20th of May, and NXT TakeOver Chicago, and it's looking like a pretty good lineup as well.
Yeah, I kind of like the way that they've brought Hideo Itami back, you know, and paired him with Bobby Roode, and they haven't had to do much in truth, but the little that they've done has kind of felt quite special. And it's almost as though in the past few weeks that NXT is rediscovering, you know, how they found that sort of, you know, that really good formula, you know, a year or two ago where, you know, less can be more at times. And yeah, I'm quite looking forward to Itami and Roode and seeing what they can do. And like you say, you know, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne, I think that could be very, very interesting in match, that one. And something that I have seen on NXT was, you know, this story of, oh my God, his name escapes me now.
Drew McIntyre?
No.
Alistair Black?
Oh my word. His name just completely popped out of my head as I was about to say it.
Not Alistair Black.
Roderick Strong. Apologies.
Oh, Roderick.
Yeah. Okay. The backstory of Roderick Strong. Now, this is the kind of thing that, you know, NXT in the past have done really, really well with characters, you know, going behind, you know, what they're really about. And there's so much more depth to him. And it just adds something to a guy who you've always known to be a really good worker. And you think, wow, you know, there really is something to him. I think maybe this was kind of needed probably a couple of months ago. But yeah, it's just the kind of the things that are going on over the past few weeks at NXT. It feels as though that they're getting themselves together, that, you know, the dust has settled after they've obviously, you know, they've been robbed again of their talent, of their roster. And things are kind of getting going, and there's a bit of momentum there. And I just feel like NXT is really coming together. I mean, do you think that NXT, that you know, with them moving in and taking these positive steps again?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a big loss for them when they lost their main writer, Ryan Ward, to SmackDown. It was about 15 to 18 months ago. And I thought that certainly in the weeks and several months just after he left, the show was feeling very, very formulaic and really quite uninspiring, in fact. I really wasn't impressed with NXT as a weekly show. And it was almost hard to feel that way because they had so much good talent on the roster. You know, early 2016, and also the fact that it's only an hour, you really shouldn't go wrong with a 1 hour slot. You know, you should be able to put in or put together a really compelling 1 hour broadcast week to week, and don't have to fill it out and pad it out with all kinds of crap in the way that we often see with Raw when they have to take that to 3 hours. It feels like wherever the writers are now are starting to find their groove, and clearly they've had to bring a lot of newer talents in, and now that's certainly freshened things up as well, because the kind of whole thing with and the whole vibe with NXT is that it is a bit of a revolving door, and nobody really should stick around for more than a couple of years on TV, and if they do, then maybe that's a telling sign about why WWE feels they don't belong in the main roster. But no, after a disappointing, relatively speaking, takeover event prior to WrestleMania, I think this one with NXT TakeOver Chicago certainly has the potential to be one of the best takeover shows in quite a while. Now, Itami, the former Kenta from Pro Wrestling Noah, is one of the great workers in all of wrestling of the last 15 years. Not the worker he was perhaps 10 years ago, and obviously he's coming off a serious injury as well. But, you know, a motivated Itami can still be an exceptional worker in the ring, and I think he can have a very good match with Bobby Roode. But my match of the night almost surely would have to be Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne. They had an amazing match in the main event in the finals of the UK Championship tournament, and I've got no doubt that this will be every bit as good as well. And that's probably the one I'm most looking forward to. I'm really excited about that one. And you know, even the Authors of Pain against DIY, I mean, they've between them, you know, now on two occasions really surprised us with some fine showings, and I think that this one will be no different, especially given it's a ladder match where, you know, they could you know, certainly hide some of Akam and Rezar's flaws, you know, with some of the bells and whistles that come with a ladder match.
Yeah, and I think on top of what looks like a good card and a show that is, you know, again being built pretty well, I think what will really go for this event will be the crowd. Because, I mean, you've already mentioned it, you know, how hot they are in Chicago, that they love their wrestling there. You know, obviously CM Punk, Chance will no doubt be there. But, you know, this will be a hardcore wrestling audience, and I think they'll be really, really hot. And I think the crowd really, really makes these events that bit more special. And I think, you know, potentially with this crowd, you know, the WWE could be onto a hell of a show here.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, it's got all the makings anyway, you know, some hot matches, an almost certainly very hot crowd, and you know, bring the two together, and it should be a really, really superb 2.5-3 hour show.
Yeah, quite looking forward to it, actually, and I'm sure we will discuss that one once it's been done and dusted. But that's us just about done for tonight. Before we go, any articles in the pipeline, anything you've got coming up or anything that you've recently had published that you want to tell our listeners about?
I will have another article coming out next month in the June issue of Total Wrestling, where I'll be looking back at 15 years of TNA / Impact Wrestling, which I'm sort of dreading having to write about in a way, but it's quite a story, a promotion that, you know, at one point looked like it wouldn't even last 6 weeks, somehow managing to stay in existence for 15 years. I mean, it's been counted out more times than you know, a whole bunch of cats, you know, between them having 90 lives, for example. Every time you think, right, that's it, they're done, they somehow survive and come back from the dead. And they're still around, they're still here. So I'll be writing about that, and I'm sure I'll have a bit of fun with that.
Yeah, they have they've redefined crap at some point throughout that period. But there was also a golden period. I do remember going back probably about a decade ago where there were some absolutely terrific matches. One that always stands out for me was Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, a triple threat match for the X Division Championship. It was absolutely phenomenal, excuse the pun. Brilliant, brilliant match. And it's a shame that TNA, Impact, whatever you want to call it, it's a shame they didn't really sort of establish themselves and give the WWE some decent competition to really sort of push them on again.
Well, that's right, yeah. No, that's absolutely right. And that's why I'm just hoping that they can get their shit together and they'll actually become a decent place for wrestlers out there to go and work, and more importantly, to become an alternative that fans can go to if they feel that WWE's not really doing it for them. And, you know, it's a promotion that's also got back onto UK TV. It can be seen weekly on Spike at weekends as well, I think it is, or it might even be Thursdays or Fridays. You know, they've done well to get that deal after they lost their previous TV deal with Challenge. And no, they've got you know, Scott D'Amore, who produced a lot of their very, very best booking some 10, 11 years ago with Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe. And if he can you know, find that magic that he had creatively, and you know, pull together a consistent product with hungry young talent, then there's no reason why TNA, against all the odds, can't become another promotion that is worth a watch. So I hope they can achieve that.
Yeah, I hope so too, and I'll certainly look forward to that article. And we'll, once it's out, we will retweet it via the Pro Wrestling Index Twitter account, which is of course at PW_index. And like we say, you know, you can keep in touch with us at the show on that account. Contact us, anything you want us to discuss, questions, whatever you want. You know, we are reachable via that. But anyway, that's it for tonight. We will be back next week to talk a bit more WWE and see where we're going heading into Backlash, which I am looking forward to. And we'll discuss that a bit more in depth next week. But for tonight, from Mo Chatterer and myself, Andy Wales, we want to say thank you to all of you for listening. Thank you for hitting that download button. That's it for the Pro Wrestling Index until next week here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. So until then, it's bye-bye now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.